going to call to order the meeting of the Senate Committee on Education. Today is April 28, 2015. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2680. And as we get a short statement from our administrator, we'll also have Representative Doherty and McLean come on up. Senator Gelsa, you want to go there or you just want to sit there?
I'll just sit here.
Okay. Very good.
Chair Rublin, members of the committee, House Bill 2680 prohibits the use of the results of a statewide summative assessment developed by a multi-state consortium from being used to establish summative ratings of schools or to make summative evaluations of teachers or administrators. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support of those present. The bill does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We have no amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued, and the bill has no revenue impact.
Yeah, thank you. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Margaret Doherty, and I'm the representative for House District 35, which is Tigard in southwest Portland. And with me today is Senator McLean, but she will be, or Representative McLean, and who will be doing a bulk of the presentation. But we just want to introduce to you what this bill is. Is, you know, I'm a former teacher, and we do summative tests, which are once we have finished a unit to see how the kids have done, and formative tests, which is what we do ahead of time to see what they need to learn. And with the Smarter Balance test, which is a summative test, it is a fairly new test. It is done in a different manner than the OAKS, which has been around since 1991. And so this bill came about from the idea that a lot of the students, in fact, Deputy Superintendent Saxon has already said probably 60% of the kids are going to flunk it. And it's not necessarily that they don't know the material, but it's how it's presented and so on and so forth. Smarter Balance is a national test. And so the Smarter Balance will be used for this year for English language and mathematics, and the OAKS, which is the Oregon Assessment of Knowledge and Skills, will still be used for social studies and for science. And so we'll still be doing that. But because this is such a new test, it really is not a fair assessment as to how schools are doing, considering they've only started about a year of working with the kids on the new standards. So that's kind of the purpose behind this, that they would not be, the scores would not be posted, they would not be used in evaluation, that sort of thing, at least for a year. So that's basically what the bill does. And for a little more information, I'll turn over to Representative McLean, and then I'll be open for questions.
Thank you. Representative McLean.
Thank you, Senator Roblin, and the rest of the committee for having us here today. And as our representative has just indicated to you, there are basically two reasons for this particular bill. First of all, we're trying to really be able to acknowledge that this test is new, that this test is being used by schools for the first time, that this test is being given by teachers for the first time, and that parents are actually not as comfortable with this test or assessment as they've been in the past, simply because maybe it's new, maybe because it's different. It's not a bubble test. It's actually a test where you actually teach a lesson. The teacher asks to give a 30-minute lesson, and then they actually have to give some testing on the lesson that they've given during that test time. There's a large amount of students, even in the third grade, that are going to have up to 7 hours of testing, hopefully not on the same day, but it's a situation where 4 hours of language arts, 3 hours of math, that they really have to figure out how to make sure that these tests are being given so the kind of results that we get are results that are useful data and also useful for the schools and for teaching and actually learning by the students. So that's the main reason, is to acknowledge that this assessment is new and this is a transitional year. It's only for 1 year. We don't need to worry about our regulations because we can get a waiver from the federal government as far as having certain data being used as a report card for the school or for the teachers, because we can gather it, we can give the test, we can have the Department of Education look at it, but we don't necessarily have to use it as an evaluation for the schools and for the teachers this year with this bill passing. It did pass out of the House 48-9, and it was unanimous out of the Committee on Education. It also, besides not using the test results for a year, actually puts together a task force to look at assessments and to really make sure that if there are some necessary changes in this smart balance test or in any other kind of summative test that we do at the state level, that we are making sure that it's the kind of test that really is going to get the results that we want. And the results that we want is making sure that our students are learning more and that we have higher graduation rates and that we have the ability to take care of some of the needs that we've had in the past as far as understanding which schools are doing well on which types of teaching and which kind of programs. I could give you a lot more information about some of the questions that we were asked by parents and by teachers and by schools, but I think I would be happy to open it for questions from you, and we can add information as you need it.
So Senator Knope and Senator Gelser are also people on this bill. So Senator Knope.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you give us some indication of how this test rolls out? I mean, how easy is it for instance, for the instructions for the kids? How long does the test generally take in the Smarter Balance test?
Well, thank you for that question. I do have a daughter-in-law who teaches second grade at an elementary school in Hillsboro, and she actually is giving the test for the first time. I also have two grandchildren that are taking that test for the first time. And so I asked my daughter how it was going, daughter-in-law, and basically Gina said that, number one, the instructions to the tests are a little problematic. And they're discovering it this year, that as they were reading it to a first grader and reading it to a third grader, they were having some trouble with the students being able to understand even the instructions to start taking the test. And sometimes those instructions took up to a half an hour, and they weren't even able to get to the first or second or third question on that portion of the test during the time they were allotted in the computer center. Now, that's not every time, that's not every question, that's not every type of direction, but these are the kinds of things during this year that we need to figure out and work out so that the teachers can do a good job administrating the test.
And I think one thing with a lot of new projects, whether it be education or whether it be in business, usually have some sort of a beta testing of what's going to happen. And this is something that really was not done with Smarter Balance. It's like this is the year of kind of experimentation. And since it is the year of experimentation and kind of rolling out and seeing where the problems are, so we felt it was not really a fair indication as to rating the schools and rating the teachers on this, because it's almost a kind of a rollout itself for the Smarter Balance examination.
Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have kids that one of my daughters took it for the first time last week. I'm happy to support the bill. I do think that we need that beta time, and I'm glad that we can have that time out for evaluating schools and teachers. I just wish that there was a way to protect kids. You know, it's the kids that are taking it. It's the kids whose self-worth is impacted when that score pops back up. And to know that about 70% of our kids are going to get a message that they are somehow failing when nothing about them has changed from last year to this year is deeply concerning to me, and I think we need to continue looking at the culture of assessments. I think there's a place for assessments. It makes sense to be able to look at how cohorts are doing, how schools are doing across populations, but our kids are spending so much time doing it, and we've got kids that are getting sick from the stress that they feel when they walk into those situations.
And I appreciate your comments there, and there is a companion bill, 2655, which is coming from the House that really talks about giving an opportunity for students and parents who are still having some of those issues or feeling that way to opt out for this particular test at this time. And I do want to say to your comments, Senator, that I think that the task force that is being put together with this particular piece of legislation also can address some of those things, because as we look at the value of a test or assessment, I think we have to look at the full scope, and that is it effective for teaching, is it effective for learning, and how are we dealing with the needs of the student? So I hope that will be addressed in the task force if this passes.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's what you do with any sort of new testing component as you go through. You write it, you test it, you revise it, you go through the entire mechanism, and so you come out with a product that will not only help you with a summative evaluation, but will also be one that's a fair assessment of what children know as opposed to how children know how to take a test.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you. You kind of spoke to some of it. I'm hoping that this task force will look at other alternatives. I have personal issues with dictates from above coming down as to how we are supposed to do things in the state of Oregon, mm-hmm. which to a degree this is. My fear is over time, whether we're talking Smarter Balance or Common Core, the feds are going to totally screw it up because they usually screw up anything they touch. And quite honestly, you know, this is more teaching to test sort of thing, and it's not allowing teachers the freedom to teach in a way that they can reach their students. And so I'm hoping this task force will be broad enough in their scope to take a look at that sort of possibility.
Well, and I think anything like testing, because, I mean, I only taught 10 years, and Representative McLean just retired after teaching for 42. But, you know, we do have tests to see how kids have progressed.
Right.
And, you know, and the one thing I remember from the olden days is I gave a test. We were doing Julius Caesar. And I gave a test on Julius Caesar, and one of the questions was, like, summarize Act 1, scene whatever. And when I had five kids that said, beware the eyes that march, I knew I did not get my point across of what IDES meant. And so we had to go through and make sure that the kids knew what it was. But the eyes were not marching, but the Ides of March were there.
A follow-up. Thank you, Ms. Chair. I just suggest that back in the day when we were in school, you remember those days?
A long time ago.
That I believe at that point in time, we got grades in our classes, and that was a pretty good mark of whether we were meeting standards or not. Mm-hmm. I would like to get back to something more along that line. So once again, it gets to the point of if we're too regulated in this, we're not allowing the teachers the opportunity to do their job, which is reach the kids.
Mm-hmm. Senator Cano.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have any data or even if it's anecdotal about how much time these tests may be taking away from instruction?
I can answer with a little bit of information about that because we've been talking on a regular basis to teachers when we've gone around in February and March and April to ask them how they're feeling and what they're doing with those tests right now. We had one gentleman who was a teacher at Century High School in Hillsboro who indicated that he felt he was losing at least 18 days to the testing situation this year. And those are 18 days that, you know, he needs to be able to teach the curriculum to help with good results on the test. Again, that may be a transitional year issue, but it still is something I think we really need to think about. And to your question and to Senator Cruz also, really and truly, it's important for the people who are with the students in the classroom who are doing the either testing through performance or testing through adjustment of interim tests or interim types of lessons, that they really are looking at the classroom and the students that are right there in front of them. And so I think, you know, to your question and to your comment, that these tests are being made by people who have never seen the children in that classroom or really understood or maybe experienced what their background's like. And so the adjustments need to be made by the practitioner or the professional in the classroom. And I think that this task force can help us look at the testing and the assessment and the tool and make sure that that is allowable, that the practitioner is able to do that kind of adjustment.
And Senator Knope going through and Chair Roblin, when it came to time, they were talking about some, especially the third graders, because of the way that the test is designed, it's done all on computer, and it's not just filling in the bubbles and so on like the Oaks test was, is that some of the students even needed to be trained in keyboarding because there was an essay part of it to do that. And so at least the teachers that I heard from, it was taking a tremendous amount of time to go through and prepare for those sort of things that took away from general instruction.
And those elementary teachers were saying they had gotten the computer lab for 9 days, but they were going to need at least 15 mm-hmm. to be able to get everybody through the scenario.
Any other questions for these two? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
With that, we'll have Kathleen Sundell, Beth Yarborough, and Cindy Hunt come on up.
And we better provide the computers.
It'd be helpful. Yeah.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Sundell, and I'm an educator with Salem-Keizer Public Schools. I'm on full-time release as president of Salem-Keizer Education Association currently, and I've been a classroom teacher for 40 years. The current use of assessments in our school is fundamentally flawed. From the billions of dollars we as a nation are spending on high-stakes standardized testing, to students who have tremendous anxiety, and to the culture of failure we are about to unfold with the implementation of Smarter Balance, we are definitely on the wrong track. OEA and our 42,000 members have shared our concerns since before No Child Left Behind was passed and have advocated for changes to be made to improve outcomes for students. House Bill 2680 will ensure the results of Smarter Balance assessment will not be used to rank schools or educators. The Smarter Balance has not been proven to be valid, reliable, or unbiased. Also, we need to commit to our students and parents that high stakes attached to assessment will be removed. We need to assure our students and parents that any summative test will not be used as the only measure of their learning and achievement. We need to take time to evaluate the results of the Smarter Balance assessment or any other summative assessment to determine the value as a measure of student learning and mastery of standards. It is time for Oregon to create a system of assessment that honors student learning and puts the love of learning back in our public schools. House Bill 2680 gives an opportunity to create a system of assessment that supports student learning and classroom teaching. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Chair Roblin and members of the Senate Education Committee, I'm Beth Yarborough, and I teach high school science in Sutherland, Oregon, and I live in 10 Mile, Oregon. And I brought my child with me to see what goes on up here in the Capitol. All right, so Oregon teachers spend too much time teaching to the test. Oregon students lose valuable instruction time to prepare and administer the high-stakes test. Smarter Balance statewide assessment instead of practicing creative thinking and problem solving that will prepare for college and career. I understand that students need to be assessed. However, that assessment should give me and the students information to know where they are progressing and what next steps they need to take. With the Smarter Balance test, I'm unable to receive timely feedback that will help the student learning. I prefer to use assessments that allow me to quickly determine where my students are in the process and what concepts they're retaining and which concepts they need further instruction on. So for instance, after learning a new concept in my chemistry class, I'll ask the kids to give me a thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs to the side. And if I see a whole bunch of thumbs to the side and thumbs to the down, I know immediately that they're not able to understand that concept right away. So then I move on with reteaching in a different way, or we find some new way to get the information to the students. If I see mostly thumbs up and just a couple of thumbs down or to the side, then I will let them continue on individually, and I go give individual instruction to those kids who were telling me that they didn't get it. And it works really well, and my students understand they should be honest with me because they know that that means I will help them as needed. Unfortunately, with the Smarter Balance test, we're using a month or more of instruction and resources in our high school to assess their learning, and I don't get those scores back for several months, and in fact, not till the next school year, I'm told. So I'm not sure how this is going to help me with the learning of my students. House Bill 2680 will provide, or will prohibit, excuse me, the use of data from statewide assessments administered during the 14-15 school year. The data will not be used to evaluate teachers, administrators, or schools during that time period. It also directs the Oregon Superintendent of Public Instruction to convene a work group to review the current system of assessment and determine a better approach. So as a teacher and a member of the work group of professional educators who've been collaborating with other educators, administrators, and leaders from the Governor's Office and OEIB, I can tell you how much impact we can make by reviewing the previous assessments, analyzing the ability of that test to measure learning, identifying needed adjustments, and making recommendations for future legislation.
So let me be clear. Teachers do support assessments. We support assessments that work. Teachers are assessing our work every day, assessing students every day, and figuring out how to improve outcomes for our classes and individual students. Professional educators know what works. By working together, we create a system of assessments that supports the goals we have in the classroom. We can create a system of assessments that supports teaching and learning. So from an educator who assesses students every day and one who knows what it takes to help students succeed, please pass the House Bill 2680A and help create a system of assessments that works for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Hunt, and I'm the Government Legal Affairs Manager from the Oregon Department of Education. The department is officially neutral on this bill, but I am here to provide information, and I want to be really clear from the beginning that the department supports the goals of this bill, and the goals being to pause the use of the data for school ratings and educator ratings, and to study further the use of SBAC. We totally support those goals. So under federal law, the ESCA requires the state to have an accountability system. However, we had the opportunity last fall to ask for a waiver from that system for educator evaluations, and we received that waiver. And so the part of the bill that suspends the use of SBAC data for a year for educator evaluations is very consistent with our existing waiver. We also requested the end of March for another waiver around the school rating system and being able to suspend that also for a year. We, like I said, requested that the end of March. We have not heard back from, you know, the U.S. Department of Education other than some clarifying questions literally today. However, in the past, they have indicated to us in other states that they are open to giving that kind of a waiver. So we think we will get it. So what the bill does, and we've gotten some questions about it, there's a little bit of confusion around it, is that it literally talks about suspending the ratings of schools. What I had submitted, actually what Jan McComb had submitted to you, because it's labeled as Jan McComb, like Exhibit 1 or something in your list, is the school district report cards. And so in the school district report card, if you look at like Jan McComb number 2, basically when you look down the report card for the Earl Boyles Elementary School, right at the bottom, there is something that says that the Earl Boyles Elementary School, for example, was rated as a level 4 as compared to other schools. That is what we're talking about in the bill, is suspending that rating system for a year. And then if you look at the example number 1 is like our fake elementary school. And when you look at that, you'll see at the bottom, that's what likely the report card would look like this fall. So you'll see a space in there that says, because of our waiver, we're suspending this for a year. But also, if you look at those report cards, you'll see a lot of other information from the test and other information around the schools. That would continue so that parents and educators and, you know, and other folks can see that, right? So I wanted to clarify that. We've also gotten questions like, would this affect, for example, our folks in priority school program? So those schools had been designated before as focus in priority schools. The schools that are currently in that program are set to be evaluated in the summer of 2016, and we believe many of them will be removed because they've shown great improvements, and others would be designated. So those are designated as focus and priority schools. That is not a school rating like what we're talking about in this bill. Another question that we've gotten is like local districts sometimes will designate or say, my school's great, you know, and we're going to give it a Crystal Apple Award or something like that. That's a designation or a compliment, if you will, to a school. That's not a rating. When we talk about school ratings, we're talking about this very narrow sort of, you know, ratings 1 to 5 that's on the report card. And so with that, if you have any questions.
Any questions for any of these witnesses? Senator Grew.
I just want to say, if you live in Ten Mile, you have a long drive to work, don't you?
Other questions for the group? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we will. Is there anyone else that didn't sign up who would like to speak to House Bill 2680? Seeing none, we're going to close our public hearing on 2680. Representative Frederick is coming for his two bills, and he is going to, at a time certain, so we're going to move to open a work session on House Bill 2186, and we'll have a short explanation by our administrator.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee,
House Bill 2186 provides that core teaching standards apply to public charter schools. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral. There are no amendments at this time. It has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
So, with that, Senator Canope.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2186 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Canope moves House Bill 2186 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any opposition? So moved, and we need to assign a carrier. Anybody jumping up and down to carry this bill? I'm not seeing anyone. This is amazing.
I'll do it.
Okay. Senator. Thank you, Senator Gelser. And that was Senate Bill. House Bill 2186. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 2186. And since we have our distinguished guest with us, we will move back to the regular order and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2713A. I was trying to help.
I was expecting a different one, but that's okay.
And we'll open 2715A as well, so you can do both your testimonies at the same time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have a few words to say here, so you'll have to pardon me if you don't mind. These are important bills to me. I'm Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland, and I really do appreciate the time to talk about these bills and these issues. I'm here to talk about two bills, 2713 and 2715. The missing bill in the sequence ended up incorporated into another bill, just so that you know. I'll come back to talk with you about that later. They all have to do with the regimen of standardized testing that has become a hot issue in our public schools. I plan to suggest the questions that should be asked, and not just about these bills, but about the educational dynamic that inspired them. The educational environment in Oregon public schools has changed, and the imposition of a mandatory high-stakes test is a driver. I simply asked, and I'm asking again, for a comprehensive review of those effects. We have all heard stories. They are often dismissed as anecdotal. To undergo such radical change without an honest evaluation of whether it makes anything better is, to me, unconscionable. So I'm going to start by talking a bit about the assumptions that underlie this push to subject our children to unrelenting testing and test preparation. Number one assumption, the assumption that children are empty vessels and that education is a process of filling them. If children were seen as growing, developing minds, growing in response to stimulating opportunities, I believe we would design our whole approach differently. The assumption that business-generated model of reverse engineering accurately tells us what a young person should know in order to be prepared for a world 20 years from now. The assumption that a test score is an educational outcome or a valid marker for outcomes. Neither has been shown. The assumption that shortcomings in educational achievement result from a lack of measurement or from failures of teachers or students to work hard enough. The assumption that achievement gaps can be addressed without acknowledging underlying causative factors. The assumption that we can mandate achievement, essentially saying, just do it, without significant attention to the quality and the accessibility of educational inputs. Now, in the past 2 years, this issue has become more urgent. The new tests mandated for this year are projected to result in failure rates as high as 70%. That is one of the factors that leads me to ask, does this represent professional best practices for assessment? I'm going to back up a bit and take a minute to talk about achievement gaps. When someone claims that a program will promote equity or be especially for students of color or underserved populations or at-risk students, I am skeptical. For decades, we have seen prescriptions for children of poverty that involved regimented back-to-basics approaches. Then we wring our hands about why they don't respond all that well. Meanwhile, families of means take advantage of the choices they have to ensure that their kids are stimulated to engage with the world as their minds develop. Parents with means do not typically drill their kids on the skills needed to pass standardized tests. No, they are the ones at schools and school boards protesting the time spent on those tests. They don't sign their kids up for back to basics or 3 R's programs. They sign their kids up for enrichment activities. In fact, here are some characteristics of the education of kids of well-off families. The learning day doesn't end when the school day ends. They may play sports or be involved in other activities that challenge them. Their parents sign them up for activities that address not deficiencies in the kids, but deficiencies in the school program. They go to art classes and science classes, or parents design home activities of their own. Parents who have the means spare no expense to make sure that their kids have a chance to do interesting things. The learning year doesn't end when the school year ends. They go to camps and classes and swim lessons. They go home to a warm home and dinner, even if mom is rushed. I'm sure I could extend this list if I wanted to. So when somebody says to me that they have a program that will help poor children and children of color, I'm going to ask, does it enrich the hours after school? How does it make sure that they have interesting things to learn and experience every day that make them want to learn more? How does it enrich summer and other school vacation times? How does it ensure that they are secure in shelter, food, and support? Motivation is notoriously hard to measure, but it's a vital part of the educational process. If we kill motivation, our successes in the measurable world are not likely to matter. Growing minds are living and growing and interacting with the world, a world that they will understand differently from how we understand it, and a world that they will shape. Our, and by our, I mean their future, depends on not only acquiring knowledge, but also growing up. It depends on their having the persistence, the resilience, the curiosity, the maturity, the moral compass needed to solve problems, as well as the knowledge, skills, and abilities. Their survival may depend on solving problems we will never see and can't even imagine. Furthermore, I believe that if we care about their future happiness and fulfillment, we must care about the quality of the experiences they have now. Ultimately, that's a large part of my concern. Is the focus on outputs, however well or poorly they are defined, simply a diversion that takes our eyes off the inputs? Now, if you're going to grow tomatoes, you want a good outcome, but it's not magic. It doesn't happen because you keep measuring the plants. In fact, you can have indications that your outcomes are going to be good all along the way, and then find out at the end of the summer that you've grown huge plants with no tomatoes. That's because your inputs weren't the right ones for producing fruit. Tomatoes need light, warmth, fertilizer, and water for good outcomes, and growing children need stimulation, wonder, and excitement, as well as educational content for good outcomes. If we don't focus on high-quality inputs, we're going to be disappointed with our outcomes, no matter what those test scores look like. I submitted three articles to the meeting record that I hope you'll read for more background on the subject of standardized testing generally. If the outcome we seek is an innovative and resilient economy and a vibrant and functioning civic and cultural life, then what do the test scores we are pushing for now have to do with it? And what do the inputs we are settling for now have to do with it? Those are my questions. So here's what the bills do. House Bill 2713 is my second attempt. Two years ago, I introduced a similar bill. My request was and remains pretty straightforward. I want to see an honest evaluation of the costs and benefits of the changes to schools that have accompanied the focus on summative testing. What is the impact of mandatory high-stakes testing on education programs and educational environments in Oregon? What is better for it? What is worse? The bill before you is better than the one I introduced in 2013 because we amended it in the House. Instead of the overly broad term standardized tests, this examination will only look at the statewide summative assessment developed by the multi-state consortium, the Smarter Balanced Assessment. Instead of calling for an evaluation by the Department of Education, this will be an audit by the Office of the Secretary of State because it is more in the nature of an audit, something that office has experience conducting and documenting. And finally, we revise the list of considerations this audit should take into account: the fiscal, administrative, and educational impacts of the assessments on public schools in this state, including the impacts on instructional time, curricula, the ability of educators to exercise professional judgment, budgets, administrative time, and focus. These are all areas we have heard about in testimony from parents, students, educators, calling our attention to impacts on the educational experience and the educational enterprise. Here in this building, we're pretty fixated on one budget, the one where we decide where to spend our limited dollars. In a public school classroom, there are several resources that are also on a tight budget: time, the teacher's attention, the student's attention, everybody's enthusiasm, to name some. When we're thinking about cost versus benefits, those budgets have to be taken into account. House Bill 2713 asks for answers to my questions. What are the costs and benefits of state-mandated high-stakes standardized tests? We are often encouraged to embrace change, but change is not always good. Sometimes it's just turmoil. These changes to our public education system affect an entire generation and inflict significant turmoil. How can we continue to without knowing whether they provide sufficient benefit to teaching and learning to make that turmoil worth it? We have gone so far down the trail of committing resources of time and money to this testing regimen, and as it turns out, far down the trail to allowing it to drive what our students study and how they study it. It is past time to get some hard evidence as to whether that we're on the right trail. Because if we're not, every school year is another year in the wrong direction. It is not enough to justify this by just saying it's mandated. We have both a right and a responsibility to ask and get answers as to whether it represents educational best practices and whether the tests themselves represent assessment best practices. We have to look at the effects on teaching and learning, and we have to look at whether we are measuring the right things and whether the scores represent something real. This bill simply recognizes that educational policy should be evaluated as to outcomes. It calls for an evaluation of the effects of standardized testing as currently mandated, a cost-benefit analysis, if you will. Finally, HB 2715 is intended to address the use of so-called data walls. These are instances in which schools have displayed student scores, often in response to a mandate from district administrators. By their nature, such display is available to individuals who have no proper use of the identifiable information and extends the culture of shame and punishment that characterizes much of the push to use test scores for punitive rather than educational purposes. It reflects a profound lack of sophistication about the dynamics of motivation. Now, we amended it in committee to eliminate potentially unintended consequences. As amended, schools may still publicly celebrate outstanding achievements. Our problem was not with the idea of celebrating achievement, but with the idea of shaming those who are struggling. That change raised another issue, in that the ability to give permission for displaying achievement information in the bill we passed in the House turned out to be less restrictive than it needs to be. I propose a Dash 2 amendment to address the potential conflict with that federal law. One of the most important things we do as decision makers is look for the rest of the story. The stories from the classroom and the homework desk are immensely important to this debate. When those who are intimately involved in the process raise alarms about what's happening to motivation and educational stimulation, the essential inputs, we should pay attention. And finally, I wanted to share a summary of a satire I ran across, which I'll be glad to provide as a reprint if you'd like. It's called All Babies Working by 6 Months Old. Walking by 6 Months Old. It starts, a group of professional sports team owners and product sponsors decided the United States was losing ground globally in producing high-quality athletes, so they met with the president and the national secretary of the Department of Sports to convince them to set new athletic policies. Soon after, the RTTS, Race to the Stadium, was established. A committee was selected to write new and rigorous standards starting from womb to stadium. The new early baby common sports state standards were established, the CSS. All children shall walk by 6 months old. All children shall run by 6.5 months old. All children shall do somersaults by 7 months old. All children shall do cartwheels by 7.5 months old. It was ensured by adhering to these rigorous standards, all babies would be on track for the Olympics and or professional athleticism. This piece is lengthy and detailed, meticulously paralleling the development of the Common Core state standards and the measurements used to evaluate and enforce progress on them. I wish I could say it's ridiculous. Unfortunately, it's not that much of a reach. I ask you simply to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2715 and give both bills a due pass recommendation. Thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions, let me know.
Questions? I did want the Dash 2s basically just put it in compliance with the Privacy
Federal.
Act. With
yes,
Federal
exactly.
Act. Okay.
Exactly.
Senator Cruz.
Representative Frederick, thank you for bringing this. I would suggest when we're doing this study that we include taking a look at the cost of the federal mandates and the dollars we get from the federal government associated with those mandates. I think we'll find that it costs us more than we get, which gives us another reason to potentially look somewhere else.
Thank you.
Senator, I had to go blank, Beyer. Senator Beyer.
You need a name tag?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Thank you, Senator Rubble. Mr. Chair, Representative, I think you're concept in 2013 is a good one, but I'm wondering if we're really trying to evaluate what the effect of this, quote, new program that is being proposed is, if we're doing it a little early. And particularly if we're kind of suspending it in the first year, we really don't have anything to audit it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Senator. I think I understand what you're saying. What I'm hearing is that for some people that it's too late, that we have actually seen, we've got a lot of information from the beta testing that we've done the last year or so, and also from what's happening this year. You talk with teachers who have large class sizes, but they're spending now, some of them are saying almost up to a third of their time on getting kids ready for testing. We need to have some begin that process, and it doesn't mean that we're going to go to every school and try to find this out, because there's a way to audit without getting to every school. Mm-hmm. But at least get a sense of how much time, how much money, how much curriculum we're spending. A lot of the problem that I'm running into is in talking with folks in my town halls. I have lots of teachers who show up at my town halls. They tell me that they're not able to do their science projects that they like, that they know the kids like, because they have to spend time. They either have to spend time teaching the kids a test, or they don't have the whole class there because a third of their kids are down taking the test or learning how to take the test. This is the kind of information I think we need to have. How much are we actually spending on these standardized tests? And we already have some of that already. It's not a matter of waiting. I don't think we can wait or should wait until this is all now just set in stone at a certain point, which is where it's going right now.
Perhaps it's a reaction to the word audit as opposed to evaluation or something like that.
I understand it, and audit, but that was part of the discussion, as I mentioned. I initially wanted to have the Department of Education do it. They made it very clear that they didn't have the capacity to do that right now in terms of money and times and people. But the Secretary of State, in fact, does do this kind of an audit. And I've talked with the folks in that division. You know, it's not going to be something that they'll pull off the shelf, but they will. They do have some ability to look at these kinds of issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I just want to applaud you for your bills. I think they're excellent, especially like 2715. And your dash 2 addresses my concern, which was how would a third grader consent to having their information be out there. And so that solves that issue for me. I like it so much, I'd love to sponsor. So
I would certainly welcome that. Thank you very much.
And several of us would like to be on those. So.
Any other questions of this witness? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are we going
yep.
to do something else I'm supposed to do as well? Okay, thanks.
We're going to have we are going to bring up Gary Blackmer from the Secretary of State's office.
Okay. He's the pro.
And this is on Senate Bill 2713.
Performance audit, in essence.
Chair Roland, members of the committee, my name is Gary Blackmer. I'm the director of the Secretary of State Audits Division. With me is Sharon Blasey. She's an audit manager, and she's done a number of audits in our education system. And I guess listening to the testimony today, I'm a bit conflicted, because I love it when people want to ask us for our help, and sometimes it's not an easy thing for us to accomplish. This is one of those challenges. I hear the controversies around the smarter balance testing, but I also think about it in the context of all of the performance measures and performance management systems I've seen in my career. And I see and I hear problems that have cropped up time and time again around these systems, and ultimately we've abandoned, in my career, a dozen that I can easily count, where we thought they were brilliant ideas and then we dropped them. But I think there are also ways for us to prevent and avoid problems. So let me kind of walk through what we talked through with Representative Frederick and some of the issues that we see as a challenge regarding this audit. We met with Representative Frederick when he was drafting this bill, and we talked in great detail about what he was trying to accomplish and what the bill had in it and what we thought we could do. And we didn't necessarily come away with a clear sense that we could accomplish this audit. In fact, we struggled with the idea of how do we capture costs? How do we capture how much time a teacher is spending out of their teaching day on this one aspect of teaching? Are we going to ask them to, you know, add to their workload with timesheets? Are we going to put a camera in the classroom? I don't know that we could come up with any, you know, data that would help us get an answer to how much time a teacher spends, which is probably the biggest, most critical cost in all of this, especially if it's taking away from a teacher's time and doing that other process that's most important, called learning. So we went away with the notion that we would keep thinking about strategies for addressing this. And the challenge that we had was the specific information that was being asked for. How much does this impact the teacher judgment? I don't know how we would measure that one either. That's a very difficult kind of a gauge for us to capture. And again, if we sent out a survey to teachers, I don't know that that would necessarily be representative. We wouldn't necessarily know who was answering and who wasn't if we actually captured the cost, especially if we were going to ask, well, how much has this affected your professional judgment in your day-to-day work? How we would quantify that would be very difficult. So as auditors, we really feel like it's important for us to have objective information to build our conclusions upon, and accumulating anecdotes from people isn't necessarily enough for us to put our name on it and for us to be able to follow government audit standards, which by statute we're required to perform all of our work by. So that was the struggle we had as we were thinking about what Representative Frederick was asking for. We also put some thought into other alternatives. The idea about effectiveness, we tend to agree that it's too early to gauge effectiveness of Smarter Balanced, because while it's got a date for delivering an audit of September 2016, that's still only year two. And to the standpoint of actually making something work, frankly, we don't know that it's going to get completely right and effective even in year two. But from the standpoint of the long-term impact, we think that having more time to do something like that would be important. We haven't necessarily figured out what that time frame might be, but we've seen multiple sorts of education proposals made that have lasted longer than 2 or 3 years in terms of giving it a chance to succeed. I stumbled upon a recent article that triggered some thinking about maybe what if we approached this audit and said, what are all the problems that can go wrong with Smarter Balanced? And what are the strategies that could be used to avoid or prevent those? That might be a useful way for us to at least look at this early on and say, I mean, I hear the phrases already, high stakes testing. That's a problem in and of itself. We did an audit that was entitled Educating and Supporting Teachers, which I think is much more important than Smarter Balanced, because we looked at teaching colleges, the curriculum, how well they were teaching the future teachers in the skills of succeeding in a classroom. We looked at teacher standards and practices and their certification process. And we looked at the school districts and the kind of mentoring and learning community they created around those teachers so that they could succeed. That is ultimately what you need for a good quality education. Testing is only an indicator. Testing is not the important thing. It's a means of measurement. And as an auditor, I have to say we use data a lot. We use measures a lot. But we're looking at the context of it. We're looking at what it really means in the broadest sense of what that organization is trying to accomplish. So the measures are secondary. And it actually goes back to that horror that we hear of teaching to the test is exactly the wrong way to do it, that the mission has to come before the measure. And if we start putting a lot of stakes on those tests, you see the problems in Atlanta where teachers started falsifying the test results because it made it offered them a raise or a bonus if their students got a higher score. So those are the kinds of problems that happen with these kinds of testing systems if they become more important than the fundamental goal. If using Representative Frederick's metaphor of growing tomatoes, we need to know how to grow tomatoes well. And the pounds of tomatoes that we grow are an indicator of how well we've learned to grow tomatoes well. It's not really the end in and of itself. So to that degree, we can't forget that part of it. And that's where I guess I would say if we could have an impact on Smarter Balanced early, it would be around all those issues. And one of the issues is abandoning it too quickly. Oregon has a long history of SIM and CAM, quality education model, and other things that seem to be brilliant and supported by all the state leadership, but went away. And to the degree that we need to look at this and say, either it's working or it's not, but let's give it a chance and let's look at those things that might lead it down the wrong path. And that's where I think an audit might be able to provide some guidance. So, you know, I have to say I have, again, I'm conflicted because I think we can play a role in this, but I'm a little concerned that we can deliver an audit that looks at the impact on the schools of Smarter Balance because it's going to be an immeasurable thing, whereas we can look back at many attempted measurement systems and performance management systems and make recommendations around what was learned from those and what we might do to make this work, or it might be something that we simply don't have any solutions to, and that would be something we could convey to the legislature and state leadership. Any questions? I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a really good dialogue as you're talking about there. It seems strikes. We keep talking about the testing, but as you said, testing is not the answer. It's just a measurement, and it's not like this is the first time we've ever done that. In fact, I think if we think back to when all of us were in school, we always had the weekly quizzes and the tests, and you know the. Different terms, midterms, or what have you. So, education has been testing forever as a trying to wait there. Part of it that strikes me is this is more one of, I guess, a question that I think you could look at and get is this perhaps the best way to do it of all the things we're doing that? And particularly, so I was mentioning to Senator Canope, if we were going to require everybody to take a test on a computer, probably the least we should do is make sure that they all have computers to take a test on. And that's a cost piece on that. And the timing, you know, is there a better way to do it? Is this the best one? Of course, I guess we're measuring that all against, you know, we're sort of being blackmailed by federal money to you do it this way or not. The measurements of schools and all that have never made a whole lot of sense for me, you know. It's just different ways to do that. So I guess there's an interim piece or an evaluative piece that would be helpful to get some feedback as we're looking at this. And maybe with the task force that suggested if we do that, that's an independent look that could feedback into that process that would have value.
Other
I appreciate
questions?
Your management or performance audits that you've done in the past have, I think, provided some good information.
Thank you, sir.
Other questions? Yeah, and I tend to agree, and we need to focus in a little more and have the conversation with Representative Frederick to make sure that we know what we're asking you to do so we can be clear about that. Representative Gelser's question earlier.
She's a senator.
Senator. we're still there. Okay. Senator Gelser's comments on the high test and what it does to kids. I don't know that that's something you can evaluate or do, but I do believe the fact that we have made it such a high stakes test, that those scores do have an effect on kids. And it's hard to overcome those effects when they first happen. And, you know, we do a lot of international testing. We do the TIMSS. We do a whole bunch of other tests. My school, my wife's school at different times has been selected as one of the Oregon schools to do it. The kids, you know, they just went and took the test. They didn't think much of it. They never got a score back. The school could get something back that says how they did. But the reality was it was a pretty high-stakes test. Our government uses it all the time to say how we're doing and stacking up against everybody else. But the kids themselves didn't feel like they were guinea pigs in this whole thing and that they were going to be individually accountable for the problems that happened. And I've got to keep working that in my head, and I don't know that's something you can work on, or but I do think that the effect of this on kids can be pretty devastating. Yes.
You raise a good point. I mean, one of the things that would be interesting to get a professional opinion back is we put so much of this testing into trying to build it into an accountability, really not an accountability from the student and their performance, but an accountability from the instructors. And actually, that may prove to be, may have proven to be, more destructive to the learning process than the value that we might get out of that, because you really shouldn't be teaching to the test. I mean, if you do that, you destroy the whole purpose of it. And I remember back then, we probably all do, when we were taking, whether it was the California Achievement Test or the Iowa Basics, whatever it was, everybody took one every year at some point. We were never trained to do that. It was just sort of an inconvenience that you had to go spend a day doing.
Senator
Richard, I would think some of the things that I would think would be relatively easy to find out, you know, if you want to know how much instruction time is taken away, just ask the teachers. They can tell you that. And to a degree, that would be somewhat anecdotal, but I think it would be informative as well. So I think there's some relatively easy pieces of information that we should be able to get out of this. So.
Yeah, and along that line, you could do computer labs. Since they all have to be done on computers, you could find out how much time the computer lab is being used for the testing. That would give you some indication of it, too. But I'm not sure that's the way. And we'll talk with Senator Representative Frederick. Sorry, I was giving you a demotion. No, all right. Thank you, Representative Frederick. So with that, any further questions?
No.
Thank you both for being here. It is appreciated. Yeah, very good discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Frederick.
And is there anyone else that would like to address either of these bills? We have no one else on our list, so there's no one jumping to their feet. So we are going to close our public hearing on 2713. And, oh, yes, come on back up.
2680, may I speak to that? You already
reopen on 2680.
Public hearing on 2680.
Okay, we can do that. Sure. Well, let me close the other hearing so I don't get out of order. The other one was House Bill 2715. We're going to close that public hearing. We're going to reopen a hearing on House Bill 2680. The purpose of hearing from Representative Frederick.
Thank you again, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. Again, I'm Representative Lou Frederick, House District 43, North and Northeast Portland. You're going to hear some of the same phrasing, but I want to also address a couple of the issues that you brought up just a minute ago. As a general principle, the more significant the consequences attached to results that come from a measurement system, the higher the bar should be for the confidence in what those results mean. That is, confidence in both their reliability and their validity. The so-called Smarter Balance Test, which, by the way, I think is really an Orwellian brand name if I've ever heard it, is still in beta. It's not ready for prime time, in my view. I'm not clear that it will ever be, but that's not the question for today. Whether we ought to be paying a vendor for a test that is still in development is also not a question for today. The point for today is that it's not ready now, in my view. And this bill applies only to the assessment results for this school year. That's what 2680 applies only for that. The bill simply says that for this year, the tests adopted by the Multi-State Smarter Balanced Assessment Consortium will not be used to produce summative evaluations or ratings of schools or educators. This is prudence and due diligence, given the serious issues that are coming to light about the quality and the appropriateness of the tests themselves and the validity and reliability of the scores it generates. Then it calls for a work group to review and evaluate the assessments. Also, I think, prudent due diligence. Implementation of so-called reforms has taken on an air of a headlong rush, and it's time to take a breath. Now, fellow politicians, we here ought to understand something about how bad press works. Briefly, it takes a lot of good press to overcome one bad story, but that statement actually sugarcoats it. In a sense, a bad story never goes away, especially in the age of Google. If a school or an educator is labeled failing by this test, it doesn't matter if the results are later deemed to be inaccurate or irrelevant or even meaningless. That label will be hard to shake. Bad reputations are more durable, more persistent than good reputations. It could do real damage to schools, to neighborhoods, to careers, and we have a responsibility to at least be sure such a label is deserved. We are not even close to sure of that right now. And I'm not even talking this time about the potential damage to children of a test that currently is currently projected to label the majority of our children as failures. Teaching quality is something that is notoriously difficult to evaluate in a way that generates a numerical score comparable across environments. When somebody says they've developed such a system, we should expect a level of evidence that has not been provided so far. So I urge you to recommend to your Senate colleagues that they pass this bill. Let's delay using these tests to evaluate schools and educators until we know more about whether the tests are all they're cracked up to be. I wanted to also speak to a couple of things as well. One of the problems we're having in a number of places is that the computer labs are in the library. And if they're in the library, that means the testing has to take place in the library, which means the library is no longer open for the rest of the school to go to use it, which means basically from about mid-March or just before spring break all the way through to the end of May in some schools, those libraries are closed. That means the kids don't have access to the computers or the library because they're being used for testing. And we're not talking, unfortunately, when we did one or two-hour tests, we're not talking 1 or 2-hour tests. We're talking 7-hour tests for some of these kids. And that not at one time, you know, it's not just one, everyone's going in for seven, but over a period of 2 weeks, they will be taking tests for at least an hour each time. And again, library and computers not available, and they're spending their time focusing on the test and getting that done. It is extraordinary for me to talk with some of the kids of all ages, but one of the most disturbing things was to hear from a young man who sat in the House Education Committee, and he said, I'm just not sure whether, are we in school so that we can take a test? Is that what we want? Is that what learning is about, just taking tests? It's not. And unfortunately, we have seen this as because it ends up being a high-stakes thing, this is the concern. So the idea behind this particular bill is very simply to try to say, let's not make this a test that is so much a high-stakes thing for the schools as it is right now. The other aspect is when I took tests, when I gave tests, when I was a teacher, I wanted to find out how the kids were doing, and I wanted to respond to them almost immediately about how they were doing. These tests don't do that. These tests do not, at this point, help any kid directly. No child, they're taking them now. Their results will come out
next fall,
basically. and yes, it will give you a general sense of how well a school was doing in terms of curriculum. And that's the idea. But we had that with the SimCam, we had that with the PALT in the Portland schools. We had that with SAT, ACT, the IB program. All of those programs attempt to address those kinds of issues. So summative testing has its particular place when we're making it a central point of our school. I think we're making a mistake. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Sure.
We will close our public hearing on House Bill 2680, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3040. House Bill 2405, work session. I'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2405 allows the Department of Education to solicit and accept gift grants, donations, and other monies from public and private sources for the state school fund. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support of those present. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time. A minimal fiscal impact and a revenue impact has been issued.
So, Senator Canote.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2405 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Canote moves House Bill 2405 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I just don't want to get John McComb mad at me.
Wise choice. Any further discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition to this bill? Seeing none. It is passed. Anybody wants to carry this on the floor?
I'll do it.
Okay. Senator Cruz will carry. We'll close our work session on House Bill 2405. And we'll open work session on House Bill 2939A. I'll have a short explanation.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 2939A adjusts the salary calculation for substitute teachers in school districts that have a class schedule based on a four-day week. This bill was voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time. A fiscal impact has been issued, and the bill has no revenue impact.
Senator Cano.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 2939A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knott moves House Bill 2939A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition? Seeing none. The bill is passed. Is there anyone who wishes to be? Okay, Senator Hess.
He is one of the sponsors. So it's
so. Yeah.
This side of the table is carrying more than our weight on carrying bills today.
I've noticed that today. So we're going to close our work session on. That was 2939A. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3044A.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 3044A allows a public charter school to use real property in another school district if the school provides written notice of the use to the sponsor of the district. This bill was also voted out of the House Committee on Education with unanimous support of those present. The bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time. It has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Senator Cano.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 3044A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves House Bill 3044A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so passed. Senator Beyer, that was good. Good comment on that side. We'll be carrying that bill. We're going to close our work session on House Bill 3044A. We'll open a work session on House Bill 3516A.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, House Bill 3516A requires each school obtaining approval from the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to offer an academic degree to annually obtain a bond or letter of credit demonstrating that the school is financially sound and capable of fulfilling its commitments to students. This bill has no prior subsequent referral, no amendments at this time, a minimal fiscal impact, and no revenue impact. Did you want to give a brief explanation of why we're moving this to the floor?
We are moving this to workforce because there was a person who worked on this bill diligently, and it really applies mostly to workforce issues and certificates as opposed to just education.
I believe he's a sponsor of the bill. Isn't
and he?
He
is a sponsor of the bill. Okay. And we were asked, and after the conversation in the
what does it do?
In the president's office about where it was going and why, we came what to the conclusion it that it should go to workforce.
Senator Denborough wanted his Denborough bill and his committee.
There we go.
Okay.
What are we getting in return in the education committee?
We're working on that.
Getting another bill?
We'll still work on that.
Bill to be named later, perhaps?
Yes,
we don't want more.
we've decided there may be a bill we'll send committee. Another one we may send him. So,
trust me.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 3516A without recommendation to the Senate Committee on Workforce.
Senator Cano moves House Bill 3516A without recommendation to the Senate Committee on Workforce. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, we're going to just send it to the floor and Adam Carrier.
Is there any opposition? I'll seeing none, so moved.
I'll make a motion.
That's it.
That's it. So any other conversations that people need to have before we adjourn today? Did you want to share something, Senator?
Are we hitting the end of the phrase on testing and accountability?
One of the members of the committee suggested that we could make a little call for the committee for tomorrow.
There we go.
What
okay.
I don't like about it, and you brought up the point.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, our Senate Education Committee is adjourned.